Hey guys, it's Lee Maddox here from Real News Australia. We're just here at Election Day, of course, for 2016, July 2nd.
I think Liberal today.
You reckon Liberals going to get the one? Any particular reason why they're going to get the one?
I think they've been saying stability all the way through.
Yeah.
That's important.
How about yourself, man? Well, who's getting the number one for you? You're going to go number one as well? Yep. Any getting the number one vote today, you reckon?
I don't know yet.
Don't know yet? Nope. Any idea who's running in the Senate?
Nope.
Who do you all usually vote for? Do you usually go with some of the big parties, or do you try and support some of the independents?
I'm not going for independent.
Not going? You're going to go to one of the big ones?
No, they're just putting spanners into the wheels.
You reckon, eh? Yeah. All right. Thanks. Not sure? You're going to sort of suss out the big ballot paper when you get in there?
Yeah.
There's quite a few on there, isn't there? There's about, do you know?
We do like the family person ones.
Yeah, okay. I see you. So you got the family there? You got the kids going there?
Yeah, you're doing that.
Pretty important for you?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you sort of sick of the whole two-party system, just back and forth, Liberal and Labor, every single time? Nothing seems to be changing too much, does it?
Yeah, it's so back and forth.
Time for a change, you think, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, give some of the...
Liberal.
You're going to go Liberal yourself? Yeah, where about yourself? Same sort of thing? Yeah. No worries, that's all I was after, guys. Thanks, guys. Considered who you're going to throw the number one in for today?
I haven't,
no. No? Or who do you reckon you're going to get your number one vote?
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, sure. You still got any thoughts on who you're going to throw the number one vote in for today?
No, not yet.
No, you haven't thought about it at all?
I don't know. I'd probably go.
We talk about the Senate here, like above the line or below the line, that sort of thing. The big white one, the big, you know, 2.5 metres or whatever it is.
Okay.
What do you reckon you're going to vote for in the that one there? You're going to go Liberal? Yeah. Do you sort of the one vote in for?
Labor.
You're going to go Labor? Yeah. Any particular reason why you vote Labor? You, which is one of those sort of family orientated. You've always been going that sort of thing. Yeah. Have you sort of given consideration to maybe some of those minor parties that are involved and trying to get a foothold? Not so much, no. That's all right, no worries. Thanks for your time. Have a good... Any idea who you're voting for today?
Nah, not yet.
Not yet? No, no worries. Suss it out when you get in there. Thanks, mate. Interesting, isn't it, how not everyone is actually sure of who they're voting for when they actually get here. Who do you reckon's getting the number one vote for you today? And why is that?
I don't know.
You're not sure? You haven't had any idea prior to coming here who you might vote for?
No, because I don't know.
Not sure? You're going to go Labor today? Any reason why that is, though?
I always
go Labor?
Yeah.
No worries. Interesting, isn't it? How, again, always vote for them. Doesn't matter what the policies are, they just vote the same party. Who's going to get the number one?
No idea.
You have no idea.
No idea.
Not even, okay, suss it out when you get in there, hey? How about yourself? Who are you going to vote for today?
I haven't decided.
You haven't decided either? Wow. No one knows who they're voting for. I'm feeling a few people are voting for today. What about yourself?
I don't even know, really.
No idea as well. Going to grab some pamphlets from everyone on the way in. Wow. Have you always voted Liberal at all?
Not really. Most of the time.
Yeah. There's a number one in the box there.
Labor.
You reckon Labor as well? Any particular reason why that is, though? You're not sick of the back and forth between Liberal and Labor every single time?
Yeah. Well, I like for it, eh?
Yeah, so that's what, One Nation, I believe, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, for you.
Labor.
You going to go Labor?
Yeah.
All right, guys, thank you.
Who the loser's going to be?
Who the loser's going to be, you reckon?
We are.
Good soundbite there. Thanks, mate.
I've got no idea, to be honest.
Not sure? Yeah. So you're going to try and just maybe suss it out when you get in there? And
yeah, have a look at everyone.
There's quite a lot to choose.
Hey there, buddy, who do you reckon you're going to vote for today? Hey, any idea?
Hey, who do you reckon you're going to vote for today?
Secret, buddy.
So, yeah, no worries, that's all right. Keep it a secret. Cool. So how should I vote for Glenn Lazarus? I'm Lee, by the way.
Why shouldn't you?
Yeah, why should I vote for him?
Well, he's back in the Gonski, he's back in Big Steps. He's for the families. He's got good values. Back.
Libs, yeah. Is that just someone you always voted for, or?
Just not happy with Labor.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That's all right. Cool. Yeah. Thanks for your time, man. Hey, mate, how you going? Going to vote for the Freedom of Choice Party in there and legalise a bit of the weed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You want to legalise the weed?
I'm not sure which one it is. I know they're on the list, though. It's Free Choice or something. There is one above the line on the white one. I'm pretty sure there is, yeah?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Alrighty, here we are, folks. It's episode number 16, I believe, for the General Knowledge Podcast. And tonight, I'm, of course, joined with my colleague, Ethan Nash from TOTT News. How are you, Ethan?
Good, mate. It's good to be back on. How are you tonight, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. And unfortunately, we don't have Andy with us. We did a bit of a test earlier, and Andy's going walkabout in the Kokoda Trail over there in PNG somewhere. No, he's over there for business as he does, but the old internet, the NBN doesn't reach that far, so, you know, it's pretty bad over there at the moment. Not that the NBN's any good here, right? But anyway, so yeah. It's just yourself and I for the moment, and we've got our guest joining us very shortly. In tonight's episode, we are going to be talking about the sort of upcoming election. What can we do about it? We have a representative from the Revive Australia movement coming to chat to us, which is Phil. So we'll bring Phil into the conversation shortly. But in the meantime, man, I just wanted to have a quick chat up with you. I noticed you've got a few good articles you punched out just recently. One today, in fact, which I thought was fantastic. I had a read of that. If you want to just let us know what those two latest ones. You don't have to go through the whole thing, but just let the folks know out there what you've put up in the last couple of days, mate, if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. So as always, just busy working on my website, tottnews.com. And tonight we put up a new article earlier today for subscribers, but released it obviously on social media tonight, called When Big Pharma Gets It Wrong in Australia. In general, we've obviously spoken about this and our audience is very familiar with this, and it's obviously a category on my website, so we cover it very extensively, the influence and the power of Big Pharma in Australia and obviously the connections around the world that are associated with that. But in this article, I basically wanted to do a little bit of a different twist to it, get an article that people could maybe share with their friends and family who might not be familiar with some of Big Pharma's deceptions. And in this article, I just go through three examples of times when Big Pharma have, in their words, got it wrong here in Australia. So I go through things like the polio vaccine that was released between the 1950s and 60s, which was infected. So millions of people received an infected vaccine SB40. Here in Australia. SB40, the infected vaccines. And I go through there talking about how the medical institutes and big pharmaceutical companies actually knew of the infection prior to releasing and kept releasing it. So I go through that in the article. I also talk about things like the pharmaceutical drug Lyrica, which has had devastating effects here in Australia and has just been allowed to run rampant since pain medication has obviously taken off this decade, and now it's starting to be restricted all over the world. And
I wasn't aware of that one, so it was good to read that one in there.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. Mm. Obviously, the Pfizer or whatever their
Pfizer.
Name is.
Pfizer.
Yeah, it's Pfizer, the silent P.
Yeah.
Yes, as always. But they were a company, obviously one of the largest in the world, and they've manufactured this, but it's been proven to obviously have massive side effects to people all over the world, and now it's starting to be recalled because of all of the relations to overdoses and suicides and deaths, particularly in countries like Ireland and over in Europe, and now it's starting to come here in Australia. But what I wanted to point out in the article is just this is just how it goes. They're just allowed to run rampant for years, and then it gets taken off, but nobody ever gets to see, you know, the results, or no one thinks about all of the damage that has been caused. And that leads me into the last part of the article, where I talk about the thalidomide babies of the 1950s to 60s, which is crazy, you know, just a wonder drug, which it was marketed as, which was just a pharmaceutical pill for things like anxiety, the flu, you know, and heaps of Australian mothers actually took this drug between 1957 until it was withdrawn in 1961. 20 million tablets were sold, and the effects of it were massive deformities. Children were being born deformed with terrible issues just because of the influence of this drug while they were pregnant. And it wasn't until recently that the company that was responsible for it actually issued an apology for it. And this was a German company that is still operating here in Australia today. And we still have victims here today. I'll include a photo as well. Mm. But these were just a couple of examples that I just wanted to highlight in this article about how people just have this unwavering trust in the medical establishment, in pharmaceuticals, in the pharmaceutical industry general, but they have proven documented cases where not only have they got it wrong, but they've got it wrong on a mass scale, and it's affected tens of thousands, if not millions of people in the instance with the polio vaccine. So why do people trust them? It's a similar story to, you know, the Iraq war, how people believe there was weapons of mass destruction there. Yep. Comes out later that there was no weapons of mass destruction. Why would you ever trust the government again after hearing that? It's the same with this, and that's what I'm trying to highlight in this article there, General. So did you have a chance to check that out, mate? And what are your thoughts on that article?
That one I did. I thought it was great. And look, in all honesty, it is a rich area. You could have been part one of a 12-part yeah. series in a 13-volume set, you know, 13... you know, per episode sort of thing. You know, you could have gone forever on that. They have such a shady history, these companies. And yeah. There's just mountains of evidence that we're just not really... I mean, look, the mainstream media actually does put it out there a little bit and tells us a bit about some of it, but we don't hear a lot of it. If you simply do a few searches, you realize how dodgy these companies are, what they've been doing to us, and how long they've been getting away with it for. And it's just shocking. And you wonder why people fall for this big push now about, you know, making sure we all get vaccinated and all that sort of stuff, because they don't talk about the shadiness of these companies. You know, if only people knew, they wouldn't trust them. But the other one I saw you've got up on your site, mate, you've back on April 4, you published this one, which is Liquid Gold, Foreign Investments in Australian Water Entitlements. This one I haven't had a chance to actually have a good read of yet, so just give us a brief on this one, brother.
Yeah, so I just wanted to highlight, obviously, I've released a lot of content in the past about foreign investment and things like agriculture and our gas and electricity resources here in Australia. And this is another form of foreign investment that a lot of people that I asked about didn't know was a thing, that our most precious resource, which is water, our water entitlements in Australia, are actually in this market to be invested in and to be negotiated in by foreign investment companies and governments and the like. And so I just wanted to highlight what is happening here in Australia, and particularly because of the Agenda 2030 United Nations plan and what the World Bank and the UN have been talking about, saying that at the current population rates and the current expansion of cities and populations, what we're going to see by 2030 is two-thirds of the world under what they call water stress, with at least half the population, you know, under no, you know, under mass water restrictions. So they're saying that there's going to be a water shortage. So what I wanted to focus on was, well, what's happening with our precious water here? And it's actually been revealed that over 10% of Australia's water entitlements, which is 4,035 gigalitres, is actually owned by foreign companies, and particularly in China and the United States, which are the biggest ones that are investing in our agriculture and land, especially now they're investing in water, and that includes 25% of all water entitlements in Western Australia alone. And the interesting statistic was, we have the Murray Basin Plan, the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, General, which I'm sure you're familiar with. We have this massive stretch, one of the largest catchments of rivers in the world, and foreign companies actually own 9.4% of the water in there. And what's actually happening with this grand scheme that's happening is, they're allowed to take the water, to sell it, to distribute it, to do whatever they want with it. And what the Australian government has actually introduced is mandatory requirements for farmers that own private water to, when they go over their reserved levels, they actually have to donate all of their water reserves over to the Commonwealth of Australia to then be, so they can then put that into the Murray-Darling Basin to replace the water that's being taken by foreigners. It's absolute
madness. That sounds fair. That's fair. What are you talking about?
it's insane. Wow. What's going on, especially with all of the drought and all of this stuff that they're talking about. And what they do is, they actually say that it's mandatory, but what we're going to give you is more water efficient technology in return. So you won't need to use as much water. You won't need to store as much water, because we're giving you technology, General, that is allowed, you know, that will improve your farm in exchange for you handing your reserves over. And it's just this insane system that's going on that I'm sure a lot of people are not aware is actually happening here in Australia. And when you think that foreign companies are owning this and they can do whatever they want with it, you look at the Murray Darling, you look at all of these millions of fish that have been dying, all of the pollution and rubbish that's everywhere because it's not being maintained. Our water supplies are being destroyed all around the country here because they're not being maintained and cared for. And what effect is that going to have in 10, 20 years if we end up in a water crisis? You know what I mean? So I just wanted to put these connections together just in an article so people understood what really was going on and who really is invested here in Australia. I named some of the companies and whatnot. But that's a great article on TOTTnews.com. Yeah. Yeah. In general, you hadn't had a chance to read it. So just hearing that for the first time, what do you think about that? Did you know about water entitlements and this whole system that's going on? And what are your general thoughts? Thoughts just hearing that for the first time?
Yeah, it blows me away, mate. But you know, like when you think about it and you think, you know, what's it going to be like 10 years down the track? And in my mind, I just think to myself, well, the governments look at that and they just think, well, that's the next government's problem. You know what I mean? Like, it's, they don't care. It'll be when they get voted out, it'll be the next administration's issue to deal with. It's, so they wash their hands of it in the water that we've sold off. You know what I mean? So, oh, like, it's just shocking. It really blows me away that these sort of guys are getting away with this sort of stuff. And, you know, we hopefully want to try and put an end to that. And we'll probably get into issues like this a little bit later on in the show when we have our guest on.
Absolutely.
Just switching pace now, I'll just quickly juck over to realnewsaustralia.com. And I just wanted the folks to make sure you jump on and check in. There's a couple of latest ones I put up there. One of them with regards to the 5G. Brussels becomes the first major city to halt the 5G rollout due to health effects. And that's pretty understandable when you actually get down to the nitty-gritty because, the home of the EU Parliament, I'm pretty sure, is over there in Brussels at the moment. So they don't want to nuke themselves while they're over there, but it's fine for the rest of Europe to have it. You know, that's what it would seem like to me anyway. But make sure you check out that one. It's a good article there. And, of course, the other one, with regards to health, US jury finds Roundup causes cancer, call for Australian review. So there's still something like 11,000 cases in the wings waiting for their turn at the jugular of Monsanto and Bayer, whoever else is going to be them to pay out with all of the damage they've been causing with their cancer-causing Roundup. So I myself, like I said, I'm a gardener, and I have used that in the past, but of course now I've, of course, stopped. I don't use any of those sort of products anymore, and I refuse to use those and don't really even want to go near them. I was always very careful when I did use them, but always hated using them. But anyway, moving on from there, look, the other thing I wanted to quickly talk about to you, and it's been in the news lately in the news cycle, just before we bring on our guests, and it is that this vegan activist stuff, mate. Have you been seeing this with regards to all these vegans?
Yes. Yeah, I've been seeing that all over the airwaves, mate. Can't miss it these days with the amount of programming that's around.
Yeah. So I've been trying to sort of get my head around this. And look, I mean, be a vegan if you want. That's fine with me. It doesn't bother me. You know, when you start forcing your thoughts and opinions onto other people, then I've got a problem with it. It's the same as religion, you know what I mean? So if you want to be religious and worship a deity or whatever, then that's fine. You can do that. But when you start trying to force other people to do it, then that's when I have a problem. And this is very much the same sort of thing in my eyes. Yeah. But what I'm trying to get my head around is with all the bad press that they've been putting out there with regards to our farmers of late. I mean, we covered it on in this podcast before. We've covered it in articles. We've talked about how our bloody poor farmers have been struggling lately. You know, it was drought. It was massive droughts. We had all that, you know, the buy a bale campaigns. We were trying to help these guys out so much. You know, they've seen livestock dying in their paddocks, you know what I mean? And then we had floods, you know, they've all been flooded out, and they've lost all these more and more. You know, we've been told that it's going to take at least 3 years for these people to recover up north, for example. And now we've got, everyone's on the side of the farmers is what I'm trying to say. So we've heard about the heartache, we know how they're struggling, everyone's backing the farmers. Now you've got these vegans coming out harassing farmers, you know what I mean? So of course the public reaction is going to be, who the fuck are these people? Like, leave these fucking farmers alone. Take your vegan fucking vegetables and piss off. You know what I mean? Like, that's the vibe I'm getting, right? That's the feeling that is out there at the moment. And I think this is a bit of a problem, reaction, solution thing happening with this, because, you know, there's a charity called Aussie Farms, which is apparently the source of their funds for these activist groups that are doing all these actions. Yeah, they've got t-shirts, they've got banners, they've got everything, and it's quite slick looking. So they've got a bit of money behind them. Not sure who's funding and where the money's coming from and coming into from this Aussie Farms charity. You know, it sounds quite benign, like Aussie Farms. You think, oh yeah, people are going to be behind farmers. Yeah, but it's not. These people are now harassing farmers. So what's going on there? It's very interesting. These vegans are terrorizing farmers, are terrorizing workers in places like abattoirs and stuff. And I'm not going to go into their cause and what they're actually talking about and what they're standing for here, but we've got to look at the bigger picture here, because now, of course, the reaction of the public is we need tougher laws. We need to get these activists, you know, let's arrest them, let's penalize them, let's fine them, let's jail them, you know what I mean? Like, there's a massive outcry now for tougher laws and for something to happen. The reaction. Okay. They've got the problem. Now they've got the reaction. So now we're waiting to see what the solution they're going to offer up is, which they've probably had in the wings from the start. So to me, these vegan activists are literally just useful idiots. You know, they're just playing a role in this, and it's going to be to our detriment. That's how I feel about that. So probably going to be doing a piece up on that one soon, just to try and get that across to people, to try and look at the bigger picture there, because that's what's really coming about with that one.
That's interesting. It's interesting. What interests me the most is, you know, it's an interesting perspective about useful idiots, you know, and whether they've been used to bring in tougher laws or whatnot. I just always find it interesting that, you know, like events like climate change protests and vegan activists like this get mainstream media coverage all over the country. What doesn't, you know, some of the deeper issues that...
the yellow vests. You know, they didn't get mainstream media coverage, did they?
Exactly.
Not that I saw anyway, you know, like they got nothing. And it was a massive, you know, it was all across Australia. Not that it was, you know, tens of thousands of people, but maybe cumulative there was. But globally, it's been a massive hit, especially over and, of course, in France at the moment, where it's sort of, you know, that's the epicenter of it all. But exactly. we didn't see coverage on that sort of thing, but we're seeing it with, yeah, like you said, the climate change kids activists, the vegan activists, yet they now want to put laws in place against activists right in time for when the big push for, you know, like the yellow vest and for all of us actual activists who want to see systemic change, we're probably going to be the ones that are going to get punished with regards to all this. So it's funny that it's starting to take that turn, you know what I mean? You can see the connections there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But look,
that's a good point.
I might bring on our guest now. So let me just go over this here. So look, over recent months, an historic moment happened in Australia. Many Aussie yellow vest groups and pages put their differences aside to unite under some core values and goals, which will ultimately benefit all Australians. There are many great Aussies who have developed strong teams and networks over the past few months. That's why a separate entity to the Yellow Vest Alliance was formed, which is called Revive Australia. Its primary purpose is to deal with the pledge that will be sent to all candidates for the coming 2019 federal election. One of the founding members of Revive Australia is here this evening to tell us all about it. Philip Watt, how are you, mate?
Very good, Lee. Appreciate you inviting me on.
Thanks for joining us, mate. It's good to have you on. And I sort of came across one of the videos that your group has put out. It was a little YouTube clip with regards to how people should be voting in this upcoming election to make sure that we tip over this two-party system. And I thought that was really interesting. I thought, well, I've got to get this guy on to talk about, someone from this group to talk about this, because this is a really good thing that people need to see. We have shared it on the page before, and I'll, of course, include a link to it in the show notes for this episode once it goes up as well, so more and more people can check it out. And then you forwarded me another little video, which was about, what was its title? I can't remember now. It was about Gary winning the election. Our Prime Minister's already selected, but I'll get you to have a chat about that as well a little bit further on into the interview here. But first of all, Philip, look, just tell us, what is Revive Australia? What is the Revive Australia movement? How did it come about? And what's your involvement in that, mate?
Well, I'll start with myself first, Lee, just to give a bit of background.
Sure.
I'm a hypnopsychotherapist. I have been involved in writing and authoring various materials and doing presentations, as well as different videos, such as what you mentioned before. For about 5-6 years now, I have been fortunate to link up with some pretty big mindfulness websites around the world, such as Mind Unleashed and Waking Times and others.
Mm-hmm.
So my work, which I don't just write about activism, but move across metaphysics, personal development, obviously, because that's my industry, that's my discipline, and also societal growth. And so I just take a very, very realistic view on the best I can, anyway. We've all got certain biases and limitations, but I just try and look at it the most realistic I can about how we could potentially move forward. And ultimately, what I've been able to ascertain within the flavors throughout all these different echo chambers and networks within the Truth and Freedom Network is that what we want is individual freedom. We want decentralization. We don't want, you know, people within national or international circles dictating to us like tyrants or dictators as to what they want to determine. All law should be based around individual rights, and we should be moving towards a decentralized, localized future where we are empowered as communities and individuals to take care of ourselves, including with food and resources and also money and banking. That's another thing I'll get to later. And so part of my role within the independent media has to be as succinct as I possibly can to building bridges between mainstream and alternative, between left and right, between conspiratorial and metaphysical, between all these different divisions and echo chambers that have risen over this time. I do believe that we're not capitalizing on our potential anywhere near what we could be. And I see the growth potential that we have both in my own life, as well as within our collective power, which I call the collective hero's journey. I'll get to that a little bit later as well. But we are just not capitalizing on it. And I find it, honestly, when it comes down to it, humorous. I find this whole situation a fucking comedy on ourselves. We are a parody on ourselves. If we want these changes, if we really want them, we will manifest them, because the people have the ultimate power. There is no escaping that basic concept, that if the people want to create a system in a particular way, we will. And so I don't sit there and play victim. I don't sit there and facilitate or perpetuate the victim mentality when it comes to, oh, it's the governments, and oh, it's the politicians, or oh, it's the oligarchs, or it's the kleptocracy, or the corporatocracy, or the aristocracy, or whatever the fuck people want to, you know, blame. You know, I'm, as a hypnopsychotherapist and a person that's been helping people for many years, I do not accept blamism as a valid reason for suffering. And what we are doing right now collectively is blamism. We are blaming other things. And ultimately, we just need to start cooperating and working together to achieve our goals. And we need to work out what those values and principles are that will unite us, and how we will baby step our way into the right future that we all want to create, which is this freedom, individual and community freedom, decentralization, localization. It's pretty much the best way you could sum it up. And so ultimately, we are in a fork in the road. This is a phenomenal time to be alive, an amazing time to be alive when you think about it, when you think about our so-called history.
That's what Ethan says all the time.
Yeah, our alleged history. But we are now just waking up. We are still babies. We are very, very young, both individually and collectively. We are all very, very young in this process. Have a look at what we so-called has happened over the last 2,000 years of our so-called civilized history. There's been trauma, torture, murder, pain, suffering on such huge bloody levels. The amount of collective karma, for a lack of a better term, that we have as a species is quite dramatic. And so we've got a lot of healing to do collectively, both individually and collectively. And we're just getting to that point where we're just becoming aware that we're self-aware, right? Where some humans are actually aware that they're aware that they're self-aware. There's different levels to this stuff, and that's where you get into different metaphysics and philosophy. I studied philosophy and sociology at university, so part of my makeup or part of my experience and learning is to think about and analyze these things in that particular way. And we are very, very young in our process, but we have a grand opportunity, and this is a grand opportunity. in fact, this is probably the right time to mention this, that if you're suffering, like as in anybody listening to this, if you're suffering, you're choosing to do that. You are perpetuating the suffering in your life. Now, you cannot control that which has happened to you, such as indoctrination, propaganda, trauma, bad parents, bad whatever, entrenched poverty, whatever circumstances you grew up in, most certainly you cannot control. And it's bad and it sucks and, you know, there's all those things. But ultimately, you can emancipate yourself. You have never had a more grand opportunity to emancipate yourself right here, right now. This is the time where we have instantaneously share information right across our globe. We are creating a global culture or a global tribe called humanity. We are finally becoming humans, not just warring ideologies, warring cultures and all the rest of it. We've got a long way to go, of course. We've got a lot of problems and there's heaps of shit going on the world stage on many different levels. But we are just beginning this rebirthing process. And that is a phenomenal opportunity. And so therefore, we have the information, we have the capacity, the opportunity to not be a slave. We don't have to be ideologically enslaved. We do not have to be financially or debt enslaved. Obviously, you know, we made choices in our past and maybe we might have to live with some debt enslavement for the time being if that's what we've chosen. But we can move in a direction where we do feel truly free. We do feel truly healthy and happy, and we are honourable to ourselves, and honour is a big, big theme that I cannot emphasise enough to anybody who listens to this. If you don't have honour for yourself and honour for your reality on all its levels, then you're not being an authentic person, and you're not caring for yourself and your world, your reality and your family and everything in between the way that you could be. So honour is very, very important. But also to be the hero, to be the I don't know if you guys are aware of the hero's journey, which is an archetype, yep. Sort of represented by Joseph Campbell, but through Jungian philosophy or psychology, psychoanalysis. But we're all going through a hero's journey individually, on many different levels all the time. So it's not one; it's many, multiple variants of it. But we're also doing it on a collective level as well. And so to really maximize the way that we're treating ourselves in health, in happiness, or contentment, what I would prefer to say, but the H's line up with this one, honor and also being heroic in your actions, both for yourself and your reality at large. This is a grand opportunity, and I cannot emphasize that enough. So stop suffering, go out and own it, own your life, because the more of us that do that, we are literally being an activist. And this comes back to that saying by, I assume it was Gandhi, I can't remember, sometimes these things get a little bit tumbled, but to be the change. And that is an accurate statement. We need to be the change. If we want to create this world that we want, if we have these expectations in the world around us, then we need to be that change.
Yeah, be the change you want to see in the world.
And exactly.
Yeah,
and
then couldn't agree more. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. Yeah, I think you're right. When people need to sort of take it on themselves to empower themselves and stop convincing yourself that you need to be depressed and you need to be, you know, in the dumps about everything. Like it's on you to make the change you want to see in the world. So why not be that change?
Exactly. And so that translates out into, once you start giving yourself the proper service, then you can start giving that service back to reality. And that's what activism is about. That's what you guys are doing. You want to give the information and give the heart, right? The love, vibration, whatever you want to call it. You want to give that to the world, and hopefully we can build all together a better future for ourselves, not just ourselves, but our children as well. And so it's not about just caring for self. It's also about getting our hands dirty and our mind dirty out in the actual world, facing the shadow, integrating the shadow, exposing that which needs to be exposed, and all these dark, deceptive levels, the conspiratorial world, so to speak, but also focusing on the solutions, because we have all the solutions right now, as represented in the Gary video that you mentioned before. We've got all the solutions to take the first steps. Right here, right now, there's so many great, brilliant people who have designed them all around the world to ensure that we have freedom, localization, and decentralization. We just need to enact on it. So anyway, That's part of my role as a writer and a presenter. In most of my work's been international, but over the last 4 months, I've become more involved on the Australian scene, because the Yellow Vest stuff happened. And what I did is I was witnessing it. I wrote a couple of articles on it, and those two articles, last time I looked, which was a couple of months ago, had over 250,000 shares on Facebook alone that I knew of. So those went viral, and I thought, oh, what's going on here in Australia? So I had a look and realised that there was a sect in South Australia where I knew the organiser there, and so I called him and said, what's going on? And then I just went, okay, stuff it. All right, what we need to do, if we're going to have a Yellow Vest Australia thing, we need to have unification and we need to have a solid plan. So I spoke to all the Yellow Vest groups, the major ones anyway, and mediated a set of agreements. And those agreements, it was a bit painful at times, but mostly people were on board and understood the necessity of unity. And so it wasn't that dramatic at all, even though we all had to make sacrifices for those agreements. We did it, and it was fantastic. But then what happened ultimately is that Australians' apathy and should be right, mate, attitude kicked in, and the Yellow Vest movement in Australia more or less flopped because people weren't willing to turn up to events. Basically, that's really what it comes down to. The events were organised. People are willing to turn up to farms and terrorise farmers, which is absolutely crazy on so many different levels. I won't bother elaborating on that because I'll sit there for a while. But we didn't even have the strength to do what we could have done here in Australia in terms of the Yellow Vest ethos. And that ethos really came down to some basic stuff, which was, we want the power returned to the people. We want our public assets returned or bought back. It doesn't matter how it needs to be done. And I can elaborate on the monetary system and banking and all that stuff later. But the process of having true representatives, and let me remind this to people, and I want to make this super clear so those listening can really walk away with this concept. Australians are the government. We the people are the government. We are... At the moment, there are people in the government who are working against their interests, and that has been turned into what is known as a corporatocracy, mm-hmm. where big money controls macro policy and minor policy at times. But ultimately, we the people are the government. We have just been so apathetic and so disconnected and disenfranchised that we have just allowed it to manifest the way it has. We don't have to continue to allow that. It comes back to that people power once again. If we so choose, we could have the right people in the government, and that's why the federal election in 2019, it won't be the ultimate answer by any stretch of the imagination, but it will certainly be a stepping stone, if we so choose, to move in the right direction. And so that is our job as a people, as part of the collective journey, the collective hero's journey. We need to make sure that we are, and this sort of comes back to, let me just explain this concept quickly, because this is a big frustration for me. There are a lot of people within the Truth and Freedom Network that claim themselves to be anarchists or resource-based economists or volunteerists, or they have these ideals that they want the social system to be designed in. And I more or less agree with all those things, really. Like, I'm more of a minarchist, if anything, but I won't bother going into that. But ultimately, I do believe in a free society where individual freedom reigns supreme. And I do believe that we can move into futurist social system designs that really, transcend this whole bullshit of this deep entrenched competition and poverty that we've got and scarcity that we've got in the system right now. However, that idealism is called something else. It's called romanticism. And it means that in as much as it's great to think like that and to want to dream these things into existence, we also need to be realistic. And being realistic means, well, what sacrifices or compromises have we got to make in the moment to get to where we need to go? And not only that, how do we actually maximize all of our opportunities and not just basically say, this is the take the moral high ground and go, right, this is the only way, this is the my way or the highway sort of approach. And that's why it's so important to, I know the voting issue that going for minor parties and independents in this election isn't going to be the be-all and end-all, but it will certainly be a contribution to heading into the right direction to help wake more people up, to get people connected with their politics more, to reduce the apathy that is very, very widespread within Australia. These processes are all important. So what I suggest is not just taking baby steps to get to the ideal romanticism that we have about our reality, but also looking at what are the grand opportunities that we've got within this current moment, what are the options that we've got, and how can we capitalize on all of them. And so that's part of this type of language and communication I've been doing it through my work, is to help people realize, okay, it's fantastic that you've put your flag in the ground and you believe this is the right way to create a social system or whatnot, but how can we all work together and ensure that all of these different avenues of momentum can be capitalized on, including voting correctly in this 2019 election. I know that was a long spiel, so I appreciate you boys hanging on for me.
No, that's good. Thanks for letting us know. It's good to know what you're all about and where you come from in regards to this. Ethan, did you want to have a question you wanted to ask Philip at all?
Yeah, General, so obviously. There was a lot obviously to touch on there. It's great to get a better background of Phil and what he is all about. I've seen him online, obviously. We covered the Yellow Vest protests on TOTTnews.com, and he's right, you know, it did phase out the exact way that he described, you know, and it was very puzzling to me just to observe what was happening with that. And what I wanted to ask him was, obviously, you've had this, the name change, the new page, mate. What is the new goal of Revive Australia? Are you looking to do more events? Are you looking to get involved in the election process? Where are you looking to go forward just at the moment? What are some of your key goals, you know, following on from some of the thoughts that you've gathered from the obviously the journey of the Yellow Vest movement and prior, mate?
So there was some problematic aspects to the Yellow Vest, in as much as there was a real good energy for unity, which I was very appreciative of. It really made my heart feel good and my mind feel good about it, because like people just went, yeah, we need to work together, and that worked really well at the start. However, there were certain people with different processes and let's call them pathologies that got in the way on certain levels. Not only that, it really came down to this issue that I was speaking about before, is there a lot of people were too busy focused on the end goal and not about the steps to achieve that end goal, all right? That's assuming that end goal is correct, right? Because we're probably all going to have different ideas around what our ideal utopia is going to look like. But and so that's the beauty of all this process, is that we all want to move in the direction of that process. We all want a better future for ourselves and our children. That's our unification point right there. We can all get along just based on that alone. Yep. However, how we actualize that and how we move forward, well, that gets down to there's a lot of disagreements in that process. But anyway, ultimately people did not turn up to events. In some places it was because of very, very arrogant and toxic, I will say it, people who were organising particular areas. But that's okay. That's how it unfolded. But what did happen is, as you mentioned at the start there, Lee, is there were some amazing networks that were generated through that. And I have spoken to some really, really good people right throughout Australia throughout this process, including in minor parties and independents. I've been speaking, for example, with Rod Cullerton and others. There's many good people who are doing their own, they're taking their own avenue for the goal, the ultimate goal that we all want. And so I took it on, as I mediated the Yellow Vest stuff, I also just took on the mediation role of, all right, so how are we going to get there, guys? What is our steps to achieve that? that's where I came up with the voting video. I thought, well, the best mathematics we've got right now, and I just look at this very analytical, it's very simple to me. 25% of Australians did not vote for the major parties in the 2016 election, right? They didn't preference them first. So therefore, that is our best opportunity to capitalize on. Yeah. Not this VONC shit, which just it's proven to not be true. But just even just think about the mathematics. Getting over 6 million or whatever it is, 51% of the population to do that, that is dumb. That is a fool's errand, is what it's called. And so therefore, that might be a noble approach, and it might be something that we might be able to capitalize on in the future if it actually did work. But right now, it's not going to work. So what is going to work? And the best opportunity we've got is to, in the Senate, vote only minor parties and independents, and in the House of Reps, put major parties last. That's very simple. If we start speaking to each other, our family and friends about that, we could make a significant dent in this particular election. And get more people in like Rod Carlton, who are exposing the undermining of our constitutional law. And so that's a fantastic opportunity we've got right now. There's a lot of energy. So the energy that's been transferred from Yellow Vest into Revive Australia went into that process. Our pledge that we put together has unfortunately fallen on deaf ears throughout the minor parties. Essentially, that pledge was sent to all the minor parties. Very few engaged with it, and most of them came up with some bullshit excuse as to why they wouldn't sign, right? And that entire pledge is designed in a way that it's just creating a conversation. The pledge is designed to literally, it's not a policy platform, it is let's have a conversation about these core areas, have a national discourse. And once we have a national discourse, that will lead to greater education for the Australian population, because the more people are talking about it, the more people are aware of it. And then that will hopefully lead to real systemic change. That was the point of the pledge. There are all these barriers that people put up in front of themselves around that, including the fact that we were once connected to, you know, we were previously connected to the Yellow Vest stuff. And so what we're going to do with that, we're going to make it... we're going to simplify it and really cut that down once again, and maybe we'll see. We'll see what we're going to do. We'll work that out as we go forward. We're still in deliberation about that, but we might make it, you know, half a page, very simple to the core. Maybe even remove our branding and not make it about, you know, not have anything to do with us on it. Because as I said before, I said this to a previous conversation I was having tonight. Actually, I couldn't give a shit how this stuff happens. I don't care my involvement. I couldn't care less. In fact, I'd prefer to just, you know, kick back and take an advisory role in this whole process. I don't want to be a spokesperson. I just want this shit to happen, right? We need to use common sense. We need to use rationality. And we need to use principles such as unity to achieve what we want. And so that's where my role comes in. It's like, okay, well, realistically, how do we achieve this? Like, let's just sit down and get down to brass tacks. You know, it's quite simple to me. I see the growth potential there. I see the potential of us creating something fucking amazing, like in Iceland, for example. Just imagine Australia just went, right, that's it, guys. What we're going to do is we're going to ensure individual and national sovereignty. All right, we're going to ensure monetary sovereignty. Not only that, we're going to re-empower our people, and we're going to make sure that our food and resources are mostly locally or regionally made, which we could do like that. Very, very simple. And we're going to make sure that our money system is organized in a decentralized, localized way, which is why I'm a huge, huge fan of local public banking, just like the Commonwealth Bank of Australia used to be when run by Denison Miller between 1910 and 1925. He was a bloody legend. He's one of the biggest legends that Australia have ever had, and most people have never even heard of this guy. He was, I can elaborate on that later if you want, but ultimately, Australia could be a leading example on the world stage. We've got so many great people, sportsmen, medical people, even journalists, and lots of different doctors and academics, and you name it. Australians per capita are all over it. It's just that we don't have an organisation that we should have to be a true leader in the emancipation, or the continued emancipation, because let's not forget, we have been slowly removing enslavement over the last 2,000 years of our history, right? We are not necessarily, we're not advanced, as I was saying earlier. We're just getting to this point right now where we're starting to really deeply think about this sort of stuff on a collective sort of scale. And so this is a process. We're still going through the emancipation of enslavement, the emancipation of discrimination, so to speak. And we've got to take the next level. This is the time to take the next step. But at the moment, it appears, and you know this, boys, really well, we're going into a dystopian, transhumanist, centralized, authoritarian, you know, fucking psychopathic future. And that's not okay, by my view, right? Yeah. So therefore, we need to choose the other fork in the path. And that's where I think we've got untapped potential that we're not capitalizing on. So anyway, just to summarize that, Revive Australia, great, great people involved. It's whether or not the Australian people want to get behind it in terms of the pledge and whatnot. We'll see how that evolves. And we're not really stressed about that. It's just, it is what it is. We're just hoping to spread more knowledge and give people more keys, give people the keys to their individual and collective power.
Yeah, it's an amazing concept, and I wholeheartedly support it, absolutely. I mean, you just look at the figures you've got here. For example, you say this, it's on the homepage here of reviveaustraliamovement.info. For those who are listening, you can jump on and have a look. There was a 2017 survey that says trust in government fell to 35% from 37%, which is already pretty low in my point of view. Business to 45 from 48. Media to 31 from 32. Yeah, again, shockingly low already. NGOs, non-government organizations, to 48% from 52%. I mean, Australia, that sort of survey right there kind of just lets you know right away there is a massive divide, that we're looking at a third of the population on some of those statistics there have, you know, like no trust in our government. You know what I mean? So we're begging for something. Most of us are just that we want systemic change. We want something to happen. We want the end to this two-party system. I mean, I see it and I hear it in conversations all the time. You know, people are, you know, it's Liberal this, Labor that, and then they realize and they come to the conclusion of their argument or their conversation. It's like, oh, they're both the bloody same. You know, like, yes, they are. Like, that's the problem, folks. You know what I mean? Where people are too lazy, and the apathy, like you talked about earlier, with regards to just getting people to those yellow vest protests or activist things, that was shockingly low as well. But the apathy is what's killing us. We kind of recognize the problem, but it's getting people, it's pushing people to actually do something about it. So that's, to me, that's probably one of your biggest challenges. I mean, do you guys have an answer to that? What's your plan with regards to actually, you know, getting Aussies off their bums and doing something about it? Do you think it's going to be via what you've talked about in the video on the polling booths? Is that your way of doing it, do you think?
That's one strategy. We have to take a multi-pronged approach to this entire situation. The biggest thing that we face right now, as in terms of the freedom versus control dichotomy that we've got, the choice that we've got to make, is censorship versus free speech. And how we resolve that, like practically, is that we can do an internet bill of rights, absolutely, because we've now got a new public square. The internet used to be more or less decentralized. Now it's mostly centralized, and all traffic goes through, you know, particular monolithic monopolies. But what we need to do is make sure that we square all that up and make sure free speech is viable and prolific on the internet. But what we also need to do, and this is where this is left versus right shit comes in. Right? There's a lot of fringe on the left and right that is fanatic and crazy. There is some left and right political and economic ideology that is good. There is a lot that is bad. You can pretty much throw the rest of it out. Ultimately, there is some good and on the left and the right when it comes to political and economic ideology. most people don't know that, though. They disconnect with particular streams within the left or right, and that's what they identify with. And so they're essentially allowing a political economic ideology that they don't understand to dictate how they think and they feel and they act. It's a very sad set of affairs. That's why we all need to rise above left or right and understand that there's some good and left on left and right, and that we should capitalize on both of those things. And it's called being intelligent, not being subject to a particular stream of thought or philosophy. And so part of that process, and this is what it really comes down to, what the new narrative is, instead of it being like one of the biggest narratives lately has been too much public is going to socialism or communism. And that's absolutely true. If you have too much public over private, you're going to lead to communism. But if you have too much private over public, it's going to lead to corporatism, which is what we have on many levels here right now. Yes, it's due to scamming and political puppetry and lobbying and all those sorts of things, which we need to sort out ASAP, bribery, all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, there needs to be a balance. Like in anything in life, you've got to have a balance on the spectrum. It might be being serious in your own individual life, but being playful as well. You can't just be serious all the time. You've got to have fun, right? And so the same goes when it comes to political and economic design. You need to have a balance. And part of that balance is making sure that public infrastructure, which is designed properly to ensure the maintenance and protection and also the fruition, like trying to think of that word where it's just absolutely fully alive and thriving, the thriving of freedom really comes down to ensuring that we have the right public infrastructure in place. And so that's where I'm like, because I used to work for the government for 10 years, right? I was in the federal government doing policy for education, employment, workplace relations, and also went to the state government for most of my time and worked with highly disadvantaged, socioeconomically disadvantaged families, including kids.
Yeah, so you've got that good inside knowledge already, yep.
That's right. I was there. And most of the people are good people. Like, most people are bureaucrats, and the politicians, they're actually genuine. They care about it. They're just indoctrinated like the rest of the population. And so, but then you've got really good people who get it at the core. But this infrastructure is how we've evolved systemically and socially over the last, 2,000 years. That infrastructure should not be like hated upon and rejected. It should be infiltrated and capitalized on to move into the next direction. Now, maybe in the future, maybe I can't really see it, but maybe in the future there will be a place for no sort of managerial systems on country, national levels, because all cultures will get along and nobody wants to use a nuke to kill each other. It could potentially happen. But right now, we have got so many dangers and risks on a global scale. It is ridiculous. There is a lot of psychopathic people out there. Mm. We need some sort of infrastructure in place to have some sort of order, right? And what we should be doing at the moment, we've allowed that order to be infiltrated by people who are working on behalf of the oligarchs. What we need that order to be doing is to be working on behalf of the people. That is our primary goal right now in terms of moving in the right direction, is to make sure that we're reintegrating the police, we're reintegrating the politicians, we're reintegrating the doctors, going back to your pharmaceutical stuff that you're speaking about before, Ethan. We're reintegrating the teachers and the social workers and all these people, because they're all on our team. All of these people are on our team, whether they know it or not, and whether we know it or not. Unless you're causing absolute harm to kids, and you know how deep this stuff goes, Lee, I'm aware of how far it goes, right? And that is, that is basically unforgivable. That's a terrible, absolute disgraceful state of affairs for being a human. But that is not the majority of people by any stretch of the imagination. Most people are just indoctrinated and they just don't get it. And so part of our role is again, education, reintegration, how we see it from Revive Australia and how I see it, is it is about capitalising on all the opportunities, reintegrating the best we can, educating the best we can, not hating, not doing this us versus them, left versus right, making sure that we've got public infrastructure in place, and coming back to the free speech versus censorship issue. This is a big one, and this hasn't been introduced to Australia before. I heard about this through some House of Reps candidate over in America. I don't even know who he is. I've lost it. I just heard what he said and went, fuck, that is one of the best ideas I've ever heard. And what he said was that we need to use the Australia Post Network, or what he said was the USPS, so the United States Postal Service. Yep. Which these systems were designed originally for a couple of reasons, but one of the mandates were so that the free speech of society could occur. And so if there was any tyrant or dictatorship that ever occurred in Australia or America or whatever, the people would still be able to communicate, right? That's what the free postal service was all about. Having like the publicly owned postal service was all about was people be able to communicate. Okay. But we need to take that infrastructure to the digital age. At the moment, we don't have that. So at the moment, we've got a centralized internet. What we need to do is have email services, social media services, also media services. So that's the software, but you need the hardware, such as the communication infrastructure, the antennas and the physical lines and whatnot.
Yep.
We need to use the Australia Post Network, which is everywhere all around our country, to ensure that free speech survives this onslaught that is happening right now. If we focus, that's one of our key things. And then once again, that's public infrastructure. Going back to what you were saying before, though, is that, and I know I'm all over the shop here, guys,
no, but you're right.
There's so much to speak about. It's, you know, an hour is just not enough. But where was I going with that?
Australia Post infrastructure and everything else.
I threw myself off with that statement. But the public infrastructure needs to be designed in a way where it is designed in a way where freedom is ensured, and so it can be done that way. So we need to, again, I'm going back to that public versus private balance,
mm-hmm.
but I'll give you an opportunity to ask a question now, and I bet you what I was going to say will come back to me, because I'm sure it was important.
Yeah, you're right. Ethan, fire away, mate.
Yeah, mate, it'll come back around. Obviously, a lot to touch on there, and I definitely agree with a lot of the mentality that you're explaining here tonight, this premise of breaking down the illusion between the right and the left and all of this propaganda that's just been indoctrinated into people that has really divided a lot of the community, and now, in obviously, as they ramp up a lot of the programming in society, you can see that it's just being used as a tool to lead us to this dystopian path that we're describing here, you know, anti-protest regulations, free speech, anti-terror laws, all these things that are being introduced because of a divided public. And I completely agree that it's all about, you know, obviously first taking responsibility for your own reality, both your objective and your subjective reality, but also breaking down these barriers of deception were coming at us from a very young age through education and all of these modes and mediums. And my question, it might change the pace here a little bit, but, you know, we're obviously talking about a lot of the control here, and a lot of it has to do with the social engineering of society by a lot of these elements that are controlling a lot of these infrastructures and a lot of these public systems that you're obviously talking about redesigning under our control so that they can be of better use to us. But I just wanted to open it up to get your thoughts on this, because we hear a lot about, you know, the words them and they and who these people are. I just wanted to get your thoughts, mate. You've obviously had a lot of exposure to a lot of information, have done a lot of things. I just wanted to get your perspective on who or what, in terms of a group or a collective or an organization, do you feel are the ones influencing this, and ultimately are the ones that we're going up against at the end of the day trying to get past this. What are your thoughts generally on this notion that things aren't the way they are by accident? They've actually been designed this way. And until we take on new ideas that what you're talking about, mate, we're just going to continue to spiral into this system that has been designed and is being used for ill intents, mate. What are your thoughts on all of that? Is there a way to identify a certain group or organization or government? What are your thoughts on how we can start to identify who these people are that are responsible for it?
So that's a big question, and it's been debated ad nauseum on many different levels, and a lot of people have stuck their flags in the ground. What I will say initially is that it does not matter, because if the people just came together and started designing their social system in the way they wanted, that we would make them obsolete. We would take their power off them instantly by reclaiming our power. Okay, I will get to the primary groups that are alleged to be in control of all this in a moment. But I'll go back to what I was going to say before. Because that instantly came back to me as soon as you started talking, which is that public assets. So you asked me the question of how do we move forward, Lee, and what I was going to say is that most of these two-thirds of Australians are pissed off with the media and the government. They're unorganised, and that they don't know the depths of the corruption, the scamming and all the rest of it. They just have an inner feeling of frustration, which was birthed by something relevant to them. It might have been corruption in government, it might have been the sell-off of their public assets, it might have been farm issues or water licenses, as you were speaking about before. There's generally a trigger for people to feel that frustration. They just don't know the breadth of it, because the media is obviously controlled by multi-billionaires, and so therefore the meta-narratives, like, you'll get minor truths throughout the media, of course. Like, that's how they, you know, people wake up pretty immediately and go, you know, these are all, propaganda, but they do mostly speak truth, or at least some sort of spin on truth with minor stuff. The meta narratives are what the problem are, which are things like medicine versus, synthetic pharmaceutical medicine versus natural medicine, or science, real science versus dogmatic science, such as materialism, or corporate science. So the fact that funding is creating most of the private funding is creating most of the scientific investigation these days, and that's a real big problem within the scientific fields, and that all flows out into academics. So ideological enslavement or bias within academic analysis of the data and all those sorts of things. But then moving into obviously the corporatocracy versus democracy, the money situation, the whole scenario of governments with a sovereign currency having a deficit or a surplus is an absolute farce. The government can have as much deficit as it wants to, as long as it owes that money to itself. At the moment, though, it owes money to private investors, and that's not how the government should work, because they are the creator of the currency. Therefore, they can never go bankrupt. If we use that system properly, and this is the beautiful thing about this process, is that the bankers, the money makers, they checkmated themselves, because they created a system where money was created out of nothing. So therefore, the people can just go, sweet, thanks for that. Thanks for creating a system that doesn't have a standard, like a gold standard or whatnot. And I'm not a fan of a gold standard by any stretch of the imagination, because a gold standard is just another faith-based system. That's all it is. All money is faith-based. The whole lot. The whole thing is a faith. Right, so why not use the system we've got right now to fund massive infrastructure projects to ensure that we have community sovereignty when it comes to food, resources, money, energy, all those sorts of things? That's where we should be going. Who cares about going backwards? Using a gold standard is a limitation, not a process of complete emancipation. I think we're enslaving ourselves if we wanted to go back to a gold standard further than what we already are now. But anyway, there are all these frustrations that people have on all these different levels, and that's why I use language, guys, to build bridges between different sects, different echo chambers within society, because all I want to do is tap into those frustrations the best I can. my activist side of me, I want to tap into those frustrations and get them channeled into a collective energy or view or steps forward. And so there is a great opportunity. Again, that's another great opportunity, and that's why we made sure we included within our pledge. I don't know if you guys got to see it, but it was very much focused on the derailment and desecration of our farmers and water licenses and the selling of our ports and all this sort of stuff that, you know, we need to make sure it's part of public, you know, commonwealth infrastructure, including banking, including communications, such as I was talking about with the postal networks, including quite a few different key areas. Now, going back to the Meta controllers, who the fuck are these people? All right, so the Zionists are probably the top of the field when it comes to the conspiratorial community, along with the neo-Nazis, along with the Jesuits. I would say that those sort of ideologies are probably right up there when it comes to some of these controlling factors. I would also suggest to people, though, that what I've noticed throughout the conspiratorial community, I got accused of being a fucking an Illuminati because I use, yeah, I know, all right, because I, it's a lot of, like, I'm a very spiritual person. I'm a metaphysicist, and so I use deep philosophical concepts in terms of my activism. So let's call it energetic injection. It doesn't matter if people understand that or not. That's where I'm at with it, and I'm using particular things and taking the power back in particular ways, and that's called transmutation for those who are aware of it or aren't aware of it. And what that means is that I use the pyramid structure, the symbol, and the cap of it, and I put in a different symbol within that cap to take the power back from the Illuminati concept, so-called Illuminati, on the dollar bill, right? And I did that on purpose, because what we do is we take back our power. That is the entire point. We continuously take back our power. That is our role, is to, call it take back your power, or call it increase our collective power. It doesn't matter. But I did that, and I got accused of being Illuminati. And it's like, this conspiratorial community have lost their fucking minds on so many different levels. Now, of course, there are some very, very deep controlling occult magical forces behind the scenes. These people do practice what I practice. I do practice magic. That is part of my arsenal when it comes to how I operationalize my life. I'm not just a materialist. I'm not just a physical body. I'm an energetic body, and I interact with my environment, and I interact in ways that you could call spells. That's a very rudimentary superficial way of describing it. But I do literally do these things, just like the occult are alleged to do. Now, these dark occultists, call them Satanists, call them pedophiles, call them whatever the fuck you want, and this shit no doubt exists, because I know that what I'm doing and how it works, and therefore I know that other people know how it works, and I know that you can do it in a way that isn't good for those around you. You can do it in a bad way. I do it in a way that helps me and those around me. Others would do it just to help themselves. Mm. So it's not a balance between selfish and selflessness. Anyway, that stuff exists. To what degree, I'm not sure. How much control they have over all of these systems, I'm not sure. I think that we definitely in the conspiratorial community, we can definitely overanalyze, and we can think, we can make connections that don't actually exist. I think a lot of this stuff is about simple greed, simple power, simple ignorance. Just like I was saying before, most of these politicians have no fucking clue what they're doing. They just do not get it. They've got no clue. They think they're doing the right thing. These postmodernists, these people on the far left who are enacting particular ideological expectations on society, they truly believe they're doing the right thing. They think they're standing up for God, mate. Like, that's how they feel inside. Mm-hmm. And that reverberates across many different disciplines. And the opposite also occurs, where there's a lot of corporations where people are just like, no, I'm just going for power. I'm just going for control. And so a lot of these things, including in the pharmaceutical industries, not all, like, I'll give you a perfect example. The majority of people, and this will probably, I'm not sure if people will be cognitively dissonant against this or not, but the majority of people who work for the UN actually are good people. They actually are good people who think they're doing the right thing for the world. The majority, like the strong majority, these lower and middle tier people think they're doing the right thing. If you read the 2030 or 2021 agendas, they on the surface, they seem fantastic. And we all know there's a deeper agenda involved in, well, some of us do, involved in.
Yep.
But ultimately, these people who are enacting this stuff, they think they're doing the right thing. It's just that this is referring to the people at the core of this stuff. And this is how I explain it to people. I just say, instead of going all conspiratorial on them, I'll just go, who the fuck are these people who have multi-billionaires and maybe even trillionaires who created these institutions, these Bilderbergs and UNs and all this stuff, World Health Organization? Who are the people that put this together? And if we should trust them, shouldn't we see on the ground not what we're seeing? We're seeing structural sickness, like structural unemployment, right? The system is designed to have some unemployment. This system is designed to have structural sickness, right? It's not cures, it's customers for the medical industry.
Yep.
But it's also structural sadness, structural stress, you know, the way that our jobs are designed, and it was only a few decades ago that you could work one job, get a house paid off, no problem, and you'd have somebody at home to actually care for the kids instead of putting them into a sick and toxic system. So we have gone backwards on many levels, and I'm not fighting that whatsoever. I believe that, once again, we need to stand up and really quickly and start using our intelligence about this process and go, what are the first steps we need to take? Which is why I created the Gary video. That is the culmination of everything. We need to all back Gary as a part of who we are, because I'm not Gary. I don't look at myself as Gary. I just see myself as part of Gary. And I would like to hope that most people who understand the direction we need this to head in would see themselves as part of Gary. And that's why I did it. It's like, well, okay, let's just, hopefully we can all just start backing Gary and head in that direction. And that comes back to what you were saying before as well, about, well, what are we going to do? It's like, well, first we need to, like, think like this. It's not about backing Gary, really, at the end of the day. What it's about is thinking and feeling and behaving exactly what I'm talking about right now, that we are all part of a team, whether we know it or not, that we have a heap of power, whether we know it or not, that we have a heap of power that we're not capitalizing on, whether we know it or not, and we have a series of initial steps that we need to take to move into freedom, decentralization, and localization, whether we know it or not. And that's the general flavor or the energy that we need to really start embodying within ourselves, regardless of which independent media outlet we work for or whatever it is. That's what we need to do. And we also need to, once again, is not look at the left or the right as the enemy. We need to integrate, and politicians and police and all this stuff, like they're just brainwashed. It is what it is. But then they're just like our grandma. They're just like our crazy uncle. They're just like some crazy friend that we love to hang out and have a few beers with, but they're racist, you know, like whatever it may be. You know, this is part of our family, and we're all a bit fucked up. We're all a bit messed up individually and collectively. And we need to start thinking like that and reintegrating if we want to move forward. It is our job. It is our responsibility to do so. So going back to the ultimate controllers, yeah, there's all these different ideologies out there, guys, but it doesn't matter. The Zionist banking control and media control mechanisms, we can circumnavigate that like that. We just have to focus on local public banking, a national public bank, of course, as well, when it comes to money, and monetary sovereignty of the government, of course, but also communication sovereignty through the postal networks. That they're our solutions right there.
Yeah, right. Well, I have one final question before we sort of start to wind things up here. What is it that the average bloke, like me, Ethan, anyone out there listening, what is it that the average person can do to help? What do we need? What do you need us to do? How do we fix this? What are we doing?
Well, good question. It's multi-layered. First and foremost, figure out your own shit, right? Like, at least be honest and authentic to yourself. At the very start, you can at least be honest and authentic to yourself. And the majority of people aren't. The majority of people, especially even those people who are part of the so-called awakening community, right? A lot of them feel they're awake. Yeah, that's it. I've woken up. I get it. No, you haven't. I would guarantee you 100% that you are not awake, because none of us are. Not one single person has ever been enlightened. Not Buddha, not Jesus, not anyone that you think might be an enlightened person. None of us have been enlightened, because we can't be. Our capacity to understand what reality is actually consists of isn't possible within our particular brain-body structure. We cannot see beyond this construct. So all we can be is enlightened within the construct. So we can have good consciousness around metaphysical and material concepts, absolutely. We can understand how things are working right here, right now, in different ways. Yep, there's knowledge and truth to be had. But the biggest picture that you possibly look at, you cannot escape the fact that we are in, it is more or less a matrix. Now, some people look at that matrix as malevolent, such as the Gnostics and other types of people, including a lot of the people in the conspiratorial community. They just think it's one big entrapment, slave system. I personally don't think like that. I more see a benevolent undertone, or I at least see a neutral undertone, and then we can do whatever the fuck we want within this process. So that's up to us to really connect with our own metaphysics when it comes to how we see reality and existence. That is super important. If people have not thought about that, how they think about the big picture of life, then I encourage you deeply to investigate that. And there's a lot of good material out there to facilitate that process. But going back to just your own honor, have honor for yourself. Like, if you want this world to be a better place, then you need to be that better place. You need to take care of all your layers of health. You need to build coherence in yourself, coherence in your system, if you want that to be the external reality that you're involved in. Now, how you do that is simply, and this is the hypnopsychotherapeutic work that I do, is I help people to connect with all their different layers, not just mental and physical health, but emotional, philosophical, spiritual, behavioral, intellectual, creational, recreational, sexual. There's about 10 or 12 different layers of health that you can subcategorize to better understand yourself and to build a consistent person, a consistent self, one that's actually healthy, happy, honorable, and heroic, as I said before. That is the first step, to actually take that process seriously. But a little bit of a tip or a bit of advice about that is take it playfully at the same time. So it's great to take things seriously, but have some fun. Like, rip yourself off, laugh at yourself, laugh at reality at large as well. Like, this is one big comedy act. This is a Truman Show on many different levels, and we should find it fucking funny, because it is funny. It literally is funny.
Yeah, I love it.
But we need to take our lives serious, our own lives like that as well, and that'll make it a bit more enjoyable for us. Now, how we actually translate that into a service, well, again, what I would remind people is to focus on the core values and principles that we're all connecting with, right? So cooperation, integration, unification, right? Team, people power stuff. Like, we have to think through that lens. We have to see through that. It's like putting on some glasses, and we need to look through the lens of people power. And it's not about all holding hands and dancing around in a circle singing Kumbaya. And that's great if people want to do that. It's fine. But we're not going to agree with everything. We're going to disagree. We're going to not like each other in certain times. You know, but that's fine. We don't have to all agree, and we certainly don't have to like each other. although we can sort of love each other but not like each other, if that makes sense. You know, we've all got family.
Certainly try.
yeah. We've all got family members that were like, "Oh, I love you, but geez, you're a dickhead."
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. But it doesn't mean we have to hate on them. It doesn't mean that we have to see them as the enemy. So that is one of the biggest revolutions that people need to go through, is to love and honor other people even though they disagree with them, and sometimes even like just completely dislike and have disrespect for their perspectives. And that's fine. Not only that, how that translates, well, the voting thing is a very let me take a step back. The values and principles is the next step, which is freedom. Okay, remember that word. I know you guys understand that word, but freedom, individual and community and national freedom is super, super important. It is the basis of a free society, and that should be the basis for how we design all of our thinking, feeling, and behavior. So individual has supreme authority over themselves while still being held accountable to doing no harm unless in self-defense.
Yep.
That is a very basic principle for freedom.
Absolutely.
That means it needs to reverberate through all policy. So, for example, a lot of people believe in freedom, but they believe in the war on drugs, right? And that there is a disconnect and incoherence straight away, because people can do whatever the hell they want. Let them be whoever they want unless they're causing harm. All right, if they're causing harm to themselves, well, we get into a deeper philosophical position right there. But ultimately, the war on drugs has been an absolute policy failure, one of the biggest policy failures of our the 20th century. Crazy, crazy situation. We need to move away from just on that alone, let alone the fact that it actually undermines what freedom is all about. So individual freedom, community freedom, national freedom, decentralization. Remember that word. We are moving into a greater centralized society. That means people that we didn't elect to be in control of our world are in control of our world. What we need to do is empower the people and people on the ground and individuals in a decentralized way to look after themselves. And then, put it this way, in my book, which is called The Simulation, it's a non-fiction fiction. It's a cheeky read, lots of swearing and mushrooms and crazy shit, but also deep metaphysical concepts. Most people will struggle with it, but it's a very, very engaging, fun read. And it's just entertaining. It's a bit of fun. But in that, I do talk about where was I going with that? I lost my train of thought. I'll get back to that in a moment.
That's all right.
But anyway, I'll keep going on the track that was going on. It's really important for us as people to work out what decentralization means on an actual social system level. Like we need to work out how we move forward in that process. That's why it's such a key word that everybody needs to integrate into their psyche about this stuff. The next one is localization again. So do we go into further globalization, which has obviously seen massive, massive problems with not just the monolithic monopolies that have risen and the corruption and the stripping of our Earth's resources and all that sort of shit, but also the disempowerment of the people. We need to make sure, like, just imagine, this is another quick side note. We are so vulnerable right now. I'm not sure if you've probably written about this stuff, guys, but the electricity grid and how vulnerable we are if that goes down, and the just-in-time servicing of our food and resources and whatnot, that is a very serious issue. And it's not necessarily an EMP attack that might happen. It could be a solar flare. We're going into a grand solar minimum right now, which is a 400-year cycle of the sun. Which is making sure that the field of the sun, because we are in a connected system called the solar system, we are literally in the fields of the sun and the other planets, which is the scientific basis for astrology, for anybody out there who has their doubts about that, because astrology is a very, very real phenomenon, regardless of the bullshit weekly or daily stars that you get in some mags. Astrology is very, very real, as is astronomy. We are literally affected by our solar system on many different levels, not just the gravitational impact of the moon on our tides, and we're 70-90% water, so therefore the gravitational effect on our own bodies. But the field of the sun is shrinking, and that's a part of a general cycle, which means more cosmic rays and dust and whatnot, particles are coming into our atmosphere and affecting our climate. So this goes into the climate debate, whereas where is the data on science on the sun science, as well as the pole shift, which is going on right now as well. It's another layer to this shit. We have severe vulnerabilities that we need to protect ourselves against. So we've got pole shifts, like it looks like we're going through a pole shift. It might take 100 years or 200 years. It might take 20 years. Who knows what's going on? But the poles are moving dramatically. The sun is shrinking for probably the next 20 years, something like that, meaning that we've got more vulnerability from space dust, call it, let's call it.
And just to make sure, that's the magnetic poles you're referring to, yeah?
Yeah, the magnetic poles.
Just for people
poles,
listening, yeah.
Yeah, they've literally moved unbelievable amounts in the last 20 years.
Yep.
Like, it is a scary situation that's going on with that.
Yep.
But then there's financial collapses and shocks. There's volcanoes, super volcanoes. There's all this shit that could have manifested at any time, which have always manifested over and over again in the history. So it's not only important to localize and re-empower the community and the individual to make sure that we protect ourselves against fucking dictatorship, but it's also important to do it to protect ourselves against any environmental or any other sort
catastrophes,
of
yeah.
risk that happens as well there.
Yeah, good point.
And I forgot what I was saying before about the other thing, so...
Oh, that's all right. That's all right, mate. Well, we're just about going to wrap it up now anyway, Phil, so... Ethan, did you have anything, any final thoughts or any words you wanted to say just to wrap that up for yourself, mate?
No, I think Phil's done a very great job of covering a lot of elements that, you and I speak about general, even just privately, you know, talking about the left-right false paradigm, empowering yourself, some of the things that you need to do to, you know, maneuver through this matrix that is around us here today in the world. And I think that Phil has covered that, you know, very, very well. And I think that there's a lot of points that I hope the listeners do take away from this, you know, particularly about the strength that you have to change your own reality and the power that if everyone did that, just little actions would make a huge impact. And I definitely encourage everyone to just go check out, you know, Revive Australia, get on board with some of these actions if you do resonate with what has been spoken about here today, because it is important stuff. And ultimately, it does come down to these things at the end of the day. You know, it's important, and we've spoken about this a lot, General, not to have this negative defeatist attitude, whether it's because of the issues that you research, because of the topics that you know, because of your family around you. There are ways and there are communities and there is a wave of people that are starting to connect and to wake up, and it's important to see the positives in that and the values in that, and obviously use platforms like this to promote that positive message so we can progress further instead of falling into some of the old traps that the ACT realm, like that I like to call it, the alternative conspiracy truther realm, that we've fallen into in the past, and hopefully move forward as a unified unit no matter what we do. And I think that the digital era will be an important part of that, and it's platforms like this, websites, movements like this that are all going to connect, because as I said, everyone doing something little, General, will have big results. So I thank Phil for coming on, and I hope we get him on more so we can expand on all of these topics that we've spoken about here tonight, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's we even touched on it briefly when we interviewed David Icke on the show, and it's all about that. You know, if you want that reality, then you have to manifest that reality. You know, it's all about that manifestation. And like what Phil said, you've got to be the change you want to see in the world. So that's where it all comes down to. And look, this Revive Australia movement. That's sort of one part of it, and you know, go to the website and you'll learn more about it there, Revive Australia movement.info is the website, folks. You can read all about it there, but what Phil was talking about tonight, you know, there's so many more levels to this that you've got to kind of get your head around. And that's why I'm so thankful for Phil to lend us his time to come on tonight and try and explain a bit of that too, and just to try and get people's heads around what's really going on these multiple levels that is involved in this. Because it really is that it is, but it isn't complicated. You know what I mean? It's a simple sort of thing we need to do, but there are multiple levels to it that do tend to be complicated. But when you've got someone like Phil kind of steering you through it, it does help to try and understand all this. So thanks again, Phil, for your time. And yeah, we'd love to probably try and get you back on maybe your post, or maybe a bit more towards the election, or we'll try and keep in touch anyway with regards to that's happening too. So yeah, thanks again, Phil, for coming on to the General Knowledge Podcast for episode 16, mate.
My absolute pleasure, guys. I appreciate your authenticity with what work that you guys do as well. And I would just like to just reinforce that to those listening, is that just be authentic to who you are. Understand that you're not woken up, you're waking up. We're all waking up on all these different levels, as Lee just spoke about. And it's a continual process. We don't get to an end to that journey. Is a continual process. Mm-hmm. We need to be the change, but we need to get out there and actually do some stuff as well. And as we go further into this censorship process, we need to make sure that we're talking. We're talking like we're family. We are an Australian family, and we need to talk like that. And we need to speak to those who might be, you know, highly brainwashed in whatever way, with a bit of love and compassion. And maybe, you know, backing people into a corner does not work. They go to fight, flight, or fright, and they won't learn anything. And just like yourself, if you're too pompous and arrogant about your perspective, then you won't learn as well. And so we all need to make sure that we're all still learning, and we're all still working out what we're going to do. We're still babies, but that's okay, and that's exciting. It's we should be interested. We should be curious about what we can do here. We need to tap into our collective hero's journey. We need to make sure that we decentralize in terms of the way that we operate. But we also need to connect on those basic values, and we need to show some integrity and some honor for our children and our future generations. And that's why it's so important right now that in the election and in any other way we can, in terms of how we bank, how we shop, do we shop with local businesses? Do we care for our environment in particular ways? Is there things that we're doing that are hypocritical to our understanding? These are all questions that we need to ask ourselves and be honest about it, and really show that respect for ourselves. So how I'll finish this, guys, is quite simply, I take the biggest perspective that I possibly can, and for what I've got right now at least, and that is that I'm just participating in a metaphysical game of magic, madness, and mystery. And so throughout this entire process of how crazy it is, all this crazy conspiratorial stuff and all this love and light stuff and the whole dichotomy of what's going on, I just look at it all and just go, ha, fuck, may as well just have fun and play with it and contribute the best I possibly can, because who knows what this reality is actually made of.
Yeah. Good points and wise words there from yourself there, Phil. I agree. We're all learning. Life is learning. Whenever you hear that mantra, the science is settled, and you know you're being lied to. We've said that before, because the science is never settled. It's the same goes with this. You know, there's nothing's ever settled. We're always continually learning. So thanks again, Phil, for coming on the show. And we will, of course, include the videos, the links in the show notes for this podcast. So for the folks out there, please jump on board. Make sure you are subscribed. Make sure you're sharing it around. Does help to also throw us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. That helps push us towards the front of the searches for folks and for the homepage there, so people can actually find us a bit easier. So please make sure you do that for us. We really do appreciate that. And yeah, thanks again for our guest, Phil, and for yourself, Ethan, for coming on tonight. Andy wasn't able to join us, like I said, but we'll have him on for the next show, folks. We've got plenty more shows coming up as well. Thanks again, guys.
Great, and thank you so much. And I'll just reiterate people to watch Meet Gary, the new Prime Minister of Australia. and send that to the politicians and make them actually start operating in accordance with those principles, because it is the next steps in our evolution.
Yep, I'll include that video in the show notes as well, mate. Excellent. Thanks, mate.
All the best, mate. See you guys. Mate.
Cheers. See you, Ethan.
See you, mate. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.